We're talking about how the things that scare us tell us about us. And it's kind of an individual and a corporate experience, too, right? I mean, we could all be scared of the same thing. That's why we might go to a movie, like a ghost movie. And everybody that goes to that movie might be scared of ghosts to begin with or interested in them. And that's why they have a corporate experience together of being scared of something on screen, like in the movie Paranormal Activity. Or it might be an individual experience, something up until this point you might not have been willing to share. What I want to ask of you, you've got all the phone numbers. What scares you the most? What scares you the most and why? And then after we start hearing from you on what scares you the most and why, I want to ask Douglas Clegg, who's a horror fiction writer, to join me in a little experiment live on Coast to Coast. So what scares you the most? If you had to isolate something, Max Brooks said that zombies scared him the most because they were relentless and they came at us. He said, you know, vampires are aloof. The stories of werewolves are kind of much more accidental. People come across them, you know, in happenstance, not because they came, you know, werewolves, packs of werewolves don't go out looking for people, but zombies do. And he said it always got to him because they were like a human virus. And that's how he wrote about them in World War Z. What scares you? And then we'll talk about that coming up with Douglas Clegg next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, we're lining up people, Douglas Clegg, to tell us what scares them the most. And I'm going to go here on a limb a little bit, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But it's been sort of a night of experiments, so why not? What scares you the most, Doug?
Well, what scares me the most is probably a very, I mean, it's a very dark thing for me to have to express, but it's that I will never see the people I love and the animals I love again. That's the loss of that, the loss of those I care for scares me the most, not just the loss, but that I'll never, my fear is that I'll never see them again. And what scares me is if this is all there is in life.
And that speaks to why both your characters in ISIS and you believe that that's one of the reasons why we pursue the return of the living.
Yeah, I think that we look for ways, you know, when my mother and father died, I immediately started having dreams about them as if they were visiting me in the dreams, and I'd wake up feeling bereft all over again. On the other hand, when I look back, I'm very happy to remember those dreams because it felt like they were still with me. And I think that I just, you know, life is so much about loss as you go through it. And we don't like to think of it. No one likes to look at it. When you're young, you're happy to lose things. You know, when you're 12, 13, 14, 15, you want to move on all the time. But you reach a certain age and you just want to hold on to some people and things that you've lost. And I think that really is it. I mean, I could say that there are other things like, you know, stepping off the curb and getting hit by the 415 bus or something. You know, that's certainly, or getting on a plane and crashing. I mean, that's up there with fears. But I think ultimately the bottom line for me is that you go through life that I honestly don't want to find out at the end of life that there is nothing. I want there to have been a purpose.
And so this is the kind of tension I'm talking about. So you say that your greatest fear is in finding out that this is all that there is, and that's informative because that tells you that what? That you should have been living your life differently? That if this is all there is, you would have done it another way?
No, absolutely not. No, it scares me the most to think that that might be what we face, that no matter how I lived my life, that at the end of it, if this was all there is, if that there's no meeting, there's no reunion, that there's no, you know, there's a dog I miss as much as I miss people, and right. I miss him because he meant so much to me, and that animal was in my life. And there was one point when I was young that I took care of a dog, and years later, when that dog could not possibly have recognized me, many hours away from where I grew up, I was now, you know, 6 foot tall rather than 4 foot tall, which is when that dog had seen me. I was on a beach. The dog comes up, identifies me immediately, and I'm like, Sash, and I knew the dog. And once, and with people too, but once you have that sense, then you know, will I lose that? You want to believe? Right. I want to believe that, you know, when my father comes to me in dreams at times, that it's a reassurance from him, and it's not just my mind working on me.
You want a happy ending.
Exactly. I want a happy ending, and I think what scares me is that there is no happy ending.
What an interesting predicament for a horror fiction writer. Let's get to Terry, west of the Rockies in Salt Lake on Coast to Coast. Hey, Terry, what scares you the most? Oh, I don't think I hit the button right. Go ahead. Terry?
I'm absolutely terrified of The Exorcist.
Of any Exorcist or the movie The Exorcist?
The movie, Reagan's character in particular, but it's twofold. I'm afraid of, you know, the fear of being possessed yourself or losing yourself, but also just like that pure evil, you know, like, you know, I guess it's a couple of being afraid of the dark or being alone. Behind every corner, behind every empty, in every empty basement, whatever, you know.
Well, I want to go back to what you said, terrified of something external taking you over.
Correct.
So thank you for that. So, Douglas, what does that say as a horror fiction writer, somebody who works with characters? What do you think that says about Terry, that he's afraid of something external coming in and taking over him?
Well, you know, it's interesting because that's not a great fear to have. That's completely a normal fear to some extent. The Exorcist is a one pole of it. The other pole might be mental illness for someone. I mean, there's all kinds of things that can go inside you and take you over.
I don't have any fear of that. I don't have any fear of something coming in externally and taking me over. Because
I mean, not even like a bacteria that could completely change your.
You know, I guess if you get into it like a bacteria kind of a thing, but I mean, in terms of a supernatural thing, something external, like a force, like an animated, you know, spirit that was coming in, I don't believe in them. I'm not at all scared of that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because in our culture, I mean, in our world, I don't believe in it either, except when I see other cultures that have believed in it and experience it, I don't know if they're I don't know that they're lying. I don't know if they're playing psychological games on themselves. But I think that there is something we don't understand, and some people have believed it has happened in the world. I know The Exorcist is fiction. It's based somewhat slightly on a case.
I think it was sort of a composite of a couple of true cases.
And so it's one of those things where, but I can understand the fear, because he also mentioned the fear of, you know, darkness of that part of the basement. It's the fear of the irrational. And I think that even when we're living in this rational world, whether that's a fear of yours or mine or not, I understand that fear because it is like the fear of darkness. I've worked so hard to not fear things that I thought I should be afraid of, like the dark. I worked so hard to walk through the house at night in the dark because I wanted to get over that fear.
And now, no problem?
Well, no, it's still a problem, but okay. it's a little less of a problem.
Less of a problem, okay. Now that you're a grown man.
You know, similarly, by the way, I start to love hospitals because I know we all end up in there someday. So I figure if I start to love them now, by the time I end up in one, I'll be like, ooh, I'm in Disneyland.
Lynn is in North Carolina on Coast to Coast AM, first-time caller line. What scares you the most, Lynn?
Well, actually, dreams of my ex-husband.
What do you mean by that?
Okay, he was very abusive when I was married to him. And I would have dreams. I mean, I would try to get away from him. And if I tried to shoot him, he would still survive, and he would come at me even with more force. I would try and find a place to hide, and in my dreams, he would find me no matter what. You know, it was like I couldn't kill him. I couldn't hide from him. The dreams were horrible. I mean, the actuality of it, I mean, was pretty bad.
Right, and I'm sorry that happened to you, and that sounds awful. Why do you think now that he's your ex-husband and he's still not a part of your life, and I'm going to throw an idea at you here, and I'd be curious what Doug Clegg thinks of this too. But if it's true, Lynn, and this is just a supposition, but if it's true that you are everybody in your dreams because you generate all of the characters and all of their actions, if it's true that you are everybody in your dreams, then what role do you think your ex-husband is playing in your psyche for you? That you keep him alive in your dreams?
I'm really not sure because, I mean, I've tried to put it behind me. You know, I mean, he's passed on now. He's dead. And I've forgiven him for everything he did to me. But
But he still haunts your dreams and still terrorizes you when you close your eyes at night.
Yeah, there's times where I have the dreams where he's this horrible monster. You know, it's funny because I'm not afraid of ghosts. I'm not afraid of the dark. I'm not afraid of demons possessing me because I don't believe they have any hold on me because I'm a Christian.
But your ex-husband, even from the grave, has a hold on you.
Yeah.
You're keeping him alive in your dreams.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. Thank you, Lynn. I appreciate you going on a limb there with us. Thank you. Doug, what do you think of that?
Well, first of all, my heart goes out to Lynn because I think with someone who's been an important person in our life, whether for good or bad, dies, they do haunt us in dreams. I mean, there is a sense that we're being haunted, whether it's our minds doing it to ourselves, whether it's an actual entity, which I don't know. I'm not going to say yes or no to because I've never experienced that I know of. But I've certainly had dreams. You know, I've had two pets where the night before they died, and certainly one of them I never thought would die, I had a dream. And in the dream, my father said, "Do not worry about the pet. I'm taking care of it. Don't worry." And it was a very real seeming dream to me. And I'd wake up the next day thinking, oh, everything's fine. And then suddenly the animal would be dead at the animal hospital. And one of them was just going in for a very small routine surgery. Mm. And it's, you know, on the one hand, part of me thought, well, that's my mind preparing me for the worst. Or is it my father? My father was a wonderful guy. Is it my father? And so I think similar to hers, my heart goes out to her because I think whether your mind's playing that trick or not, or it's something else, it's a terrible thing to have to deal with and to have to wake up from. You know, waking up from a dream, you're relieved, but you also feel like, oh, it's somewhere there in your mind and it may come back.
Well, you know, and again, I don't know because I can't know ultimately, but if it's true that we are everybody in our dreams and she's keeping her ex-husband alive,
right. Chasing
her around and terrorizing her in her dreams, I am reminded of people I know who have built their success around anger toward other people, that they were really angry with their parents, and so they go on to be incredibly successful people. And they almost lose their impetus to be successful when they lost their anger.
Boy, that is a very interesting insight. I've seen that too, and I had never thought of it in that way.
So what is her ex-husband chasing her to do? What is, you know, and in that dream or in that thing that she fears the most, is she using her ex-husband? And I'm just throwing this out here. I mean, Lynn, God bless you. Again, I'm so sorry you had to go through it. But is that like so much of what we do in horror? We have horror for us to explore our better selves.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting you said that because I'm sure there'd be some expert that I'm not talking about lucid dreaming with Lynn and saying in the dream, go find out what he wants. Stop. Don't fight him. See
right. What
he does want from you. And it may be that he's going to say, I'm sorry. You know, like, we don't know.
Oh, that'd be interesting, like chasing around just so he could say. But even she said, even when she would shoot him, he would relentlessly keep coming toward her. And this sounds so much like, you know, Michael from the Halloween movies or something.
Exactly.
Where no matter what you do, he still, you know, rises back up again. And yet I think, again, that comes back to that movie ultimately, and so many horror movies are the triumph of good over evil.
Yeah.
And we need to have the evil in order for us to triumph over it.
And now this is a really interesting discussion because with Lynn, it's interesting. Her story was very touching because my heart goes out to her because I know I've been haunted in dreams by my parents who I absolutely adored. And so, I mean, I had problems with them, but I absolutely adored them, so that those dreams, I wake up from feeling wonderful. But I know, you know, I had a sibling where after one of my parents died, so, you know, in his dreams, she came after him in not a good way, like in a negative way. And I was surprised by it. And I really thought, oh, that must be a tough thing, whatever he's working out. And I'm sure with whatever Lynn's working out, that must be a very tough thing to work out.
Douglas Clegg is a fiction writer of horror and suspense, and you can find out more about him on coasttocoastam.com. We're just kind of exploring the things that scare you the most. Wildcard line. Are we saying, is it Elena or Ilana?
Ilana.
Thank you.
Hi.
What scares you the most?
What's happening to me right now is what's scaring me the most, and I hope that whatever I imagine is not going to go. A few prayers are needed. I have stage 4 cancer, and I'm, it's metastatic breast to the liver, and
I'm
have to find out how it's doing. I'm not afraid of dying. So, you know, it's I'm accepting whatever fate I have in the next over the next year, five years, I have no idea. I accept my fate. What I am very sad about is when I first came to Vegas, my guy, he doesn't want to be named, but he is a very caring person. The goal was for him to take care of me. What we didn't know was that when I came here, he would come down with a mysterious illness, and he doesn't have insurance to get diagnosed, and it affects him very badly. And I'm the one with disability insurance. It's helping us both. I'm terrified of that he'll never get a diagnosis, and that if I go, he'll be called homeless without his dreams ever coming true because we don't have the money to get him diagnosed. And I don't fear for myself. I fear for him. And so,
I'm so sorry what you're dealing with, and it's so sweet of you to be more worried about him than about you. So ultimately, your fear is not about you dying, but it's the fact that by you dying, you've left somebody to have to sort out life on their own without you.
Without me and without my disability insurance, that helps us both survive. He won't. We don't have the money to get him diagnosed, and if I go, then he won't have even income to even be able to have a place to live.
Wow.
I worry very much for him.
And there's no social systems or anybody you can turn to in Las Vegas or in Nevada that can help provide
The problem is there is a clinic here in Vegas that actually specializes in the symptoms that he has. Trouble is they don't take insurance, and they're pretty damn expensive.
Right.
And so
I'm just surprised there isn't somebody, a social service organization or something that wouldn't, Catholic Charities or Lutheran Social Services.
The irony of my having cancer is that I can get help for the cancer, but when you can't get, in order to get help, you need to get diagnosed in the first place, and then get diagnosed, get money for the diagnosis, and it's a real loop.
Well, I'm so sorry. And thank you for that. And that's that whole bureaucratic nightmare scenario, that too is a real life horror for a lot of people who are dealing with all of the red tape that they have in their life, and that red tape can just seem absolutely eternal, endless, just can't even get out of it. That's sort of a non-supernatural way of looking at horror, but it just is awful. Don't you think, Doug?
Again, my heart goes out to this listener. I think that, first of all, this is certainly a fear I have, which is I always think, and I'm not in the same situation she is. I'm not trying to even put myself there because I can't imagine what it's like. But I always think, what happens if I go? What will my better half do? Will bad things happen? And she's in a much more immediate situation with that. And my heart goes out to her because I think, I can't give great practical solutions for her other than to look for agencies to see if she can go to the, or if he can even, if there's a way to access a public library, internet or something so that they can Google and look to see if there's any place that can help them in this situation. Because I think the distress of that must be terrible for her health and what she's going through.
Ilana's fear of leaving somebody and the red tape it takes to try to take care of somebody else speaks directly to Mike on a wild card line on what his greatest fear is. And Aaron is in California, and he's a logger, and he really does have a great fear of something, which makes perfect sense when he explains it coming up. And there's one or two open lines for you. So what scares you the most? We're exploring that tonight with fiction horror writer Douglas Clegg on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. There is no right or wrong answer, only truthful answers. What scares you the most? And then to a point, why? We're exploring that with Douglas Clegg, who's the horror fiction writer that we've linked up to at coasttocoastam.com. Check out the blog, too, for a look at paranormal activity. And also, interesting story about road ghosts, which is there. I put the link up for that. And if you heard earlier, you heard Douglas give you tips on how to tell a ghost story well or any kind of horror story well. And that's cut to the part of the story as quickly as possible before the mistake. You know, that whether it's fiction or nonfiction, people tend to make a mistake in the story. They They know better than to go into the house, but they do. That's the mistake. They know better than to open the cabinet. They instead of running away and calling police, people kind of push their way through, hoping that it's all going to be okay. And that's both good to consider when we're going to be doing Ghost to Ghost coming up on Halloween night, to cut to that part of the story as fast as possible. But also, too, to cut to the mistake brings me back to one of the links I put up on my blog. It's a link to tragic photos of things that people decided to wear to Walmart. Now, I have no issue with Walmart. It's a fabulous place. Anybody who goes to it, you're just like me. You know, there's certain things you have to get when you're at Walmart. But you don't have to wear what these people wear when they go shopping. It's a funny website, and I put the link up on my webpage that you can link up to at coasttocoastam.com. Just click on the blog and take a look at the mistake and the horror of it all there live at coasttocoastam.com. Back with your real-life things that you fear, both the super mundane and the supernatural, next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Doug Clegg's new book is called ISIS. You can find out more about it through our webpage. Let's go to Mike in Virginia, because it's an interesting pickup after the last caller was talking about the fear of leaving somebody behind and there is no system to support their loved one as she was in stage 4 cancer, which we were sorry to hear about. Mike, what's your greatest fear?
Well, ever since I was a kid, I saw Failsafe, and we had World War III could start because of an electrode popping wrong on an airplane. And then reading Z Wars, and you see how easily the wheels of civilization roll right off the tracks
right
with something as brainless as a zombie. The thing is, even with the current events now, I'm at the mercy of really large, complex organizations that don't work really well.
Right. So your greatest fear would be government systems that break down, rapidly.
Yes.
That's interesting. How often do you think about that?
Well, since I work for one, daily.
Yeah. Well, keep up the good work. Help protect us all. I hadn't been fearful of that until you brought it up. It makes me think about that. But I do think that's interesting. We look for structure, external structure, and we hope that other things will be there to bail us out.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that fear is so normal. I mean, I certainly have it too, because we do look for structure, and it's also that we want to believe that there's a group, there's a bureaucracy, there's a company, there's someone that takes care of us, there's security. And, I have friends, I'm a novelist, so I make my own work every time I write a book. I don't work for someone else. I work for myself, which means I always have to be on my toes. I have friends who get jobs, and they feel very secure in them because they believe that company somehow is completely taking care of them, which always, that's always dashed. That dream is always dashed because there is no security in the world. You have to make your own security.
Right.
And so what that guy's talking about is on the biggest level, that security breaks down, and the fear is, the chaos that will ensue or the tragedies that will ensue, and how what you thought was safe never will be safe is the opposite, is actually preying upon you. Believe me, that I think that guy has hit, should write a book. Should write a book because he's hit a nail on the head with it. That's a great fear.
I'll take it one step further. First of all, I'll say, I think you're right. A lot of people that would have gone into banking because they thought banking was going to be nice and solid and you could work for 30 or 40 years. Nobody has these kind of secure jobs anymore. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, everybody's in radio now, right? I mean, everybody could lose their gig at any minute.
Yeah,
everybody, it's welcome to my life. But the other part that's interesting about that is that is a fear. That's one of those story themes I love, is when the government systems on which people have relied turn out to be something else. So
right.
Whether they turn out to be aliens or whether they turn out to be cultists or whether they turn out to be the undead or whatever. There's something really cool for me in those kind of stories because it takes something which is so familiar and so taken for granted as the bureaucracies that are around us and makes you suddenly realize you were missing something major all along. It was hiding in plain sight, and they're just waiting for you to trip up so they could come after you.
Yeah, and you know, I have a friend whose father, during the McCarthy era, this friend's father was a Hollywood screenwriter and did quite well. I think he won an Oscar, or at least was up for an Oscar for the Jackie Robinson story, and he wrote several things. And when the McCarthy thing came up, he was suddenly blacklisted. He didn't know why. Well, it turns out later on they found out it was somebody with a similar spelling of his name but slightly different that was really being blacklisted.
Right.
But nobody in Hollywood noticed the difference in spelling.
I'll be darned.
And
it ruined
a phenomenal career. And so that's also that thing of, like, the machine turning on you, that there's one little screw that goes loose.
Right, right.
And I think that's part of the fear, too. And he's really talking about, like, really a system, what people were afraid Y2K might be. You know, remember Y2K, where everybody
sure.
was like, put water in the basement, you know?
Right, right. Oh, believe me, we did.
Tomorrow.
Right.
We're going to be fighting our neighbor over the bones of the dog to survive.
Right.
And I think there is that fear that goes on, and there's a big panic button there.
Well, and I'll cop to the fact that here on Coast to Coast, I mean, I was on during that time, and the leading up to Y2K, like until about 6 months away, I really didn't know what was going to happen. And then the more I started reading, the more I thought, oh, we're going to be okay. But by that point, the momentum of no planes are going to drop from the sky that had taken on a life of its own. But for a while there, I have to say, I was right in the middle of that, too. Aaron is in California. He's a logger. Now, Aaron, are you out literally in the woods chopping down trees like you're supposed to every day?
The season's over with. You know, it rains here most of the winter time, so we shut down the landings and everything because it gets too greasy. You know, like, trucks can't get out of there. But
up until that point, so you're cutting. And you have an actual fear of something while you're logging?
Well, you know, we logged near where that Patterson film was made, you know, right up there by Six Rivers Forest. And, you know, I'll pull over in my truck, and there's nobody out there. I mean, you know, you got to be authorized to be on this private property. And, you know, I'll just get out of my truck, start eating my lunch, and, you know, I get creeped out, man. Like, something's watching me, you know, like, what's going on, you know?
Do you
My
really
fear is actually seeing it? Like, what, you know, what are you going to do when you actually find out, you know, the boogeyman exists? You know, like
that if there is a Bigfoot, that it would be you versus Bigfoot out in the woods, and all you'd be armed with is a cheese sandwich.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I heard, you know, they think the woods is theirs. You know, then they see all these clear cuts everywhere, and they're going to be, you know, hell to pay.
That'd be an interesting horror angle, Aaron. I mean, Bigfoot has taken on sort of this benevolent Harry and the Hendersons kind of a spin. But
yeah.
I wonder, that's a really interesting story idea, a motif on that, is if somebody ever came across Bigfoot's den and it was littered with the hard hat helmets of loggers that had never been heard from again.
I hope not. You know,
I'm not trying to make it worse for you, dude. But and I appreciate that, Aaron. Thank you so much. We're getting to other people's greatest fears. Doug Clegg, that's interesting. Monsters in general, especially the ones which can't be reasoned with. I think that's the note from Bigfoot, is that, you know, we may have a connection to it, but Bigfoot theoretically wouldn't care if we lived or died. We were just another animal to be mastered.
Yeah, or it could be like, you know, that Sawney Bean legend in Scotland. I don't know if it's a legend, but the family that was found, they'd been grabbing people off the road in the, I want to say, the 17th century or 18th century on a road in Scotland and essentially devouring them. They were a cannibalistic family that for decades had been living in these caves on the cliffs, and every time a rich carriage came through, they'd basically grab someone out of it. You know, when they found these caves full of bones, it was just, you know, so what if Bigfoot is like that? What if there are caves full of bones? You're right, in hard hats. Or what if Bigfoot mistook Aaron for, like, you know, his bride?
Oh. See, but even there's sort of a comic aspect to that.
Exactly, because, you know, if you have big feet. No, I'm kidding.
Right. Now, Doug, you're giving. Now you know why you and your mom had that problem.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. Let me get to east of the Rockies, where Darren is in Nodak. Darren, what do you fear the most?
Hey, Ian. The concept of eternity, just going on, and there's never an end to it. You know.
Yeah. That if eternity on this earth, or just the eternal soul, even.
Well, you know, we're all gonna die. There's no way you can get around it. But you know, every religion has its take on what happens and where you go and whatnot. But just wherever you go, you're there, you know, eternally. And you know, there's no end. It just goes on and on. And you know, they say a billion years goes by in a second or whatever, blah, blah, blah. There's no measurement. Well, you know, there's no measurement because there's nothing to measure. It just keeps going and it never ends. And it's just, you know, if you think about it long enough, it almost drives you mad. And that's kind of, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, since I was a little kid, that always really bothered me. And, you know, you never really know until you go exactly what's there. But
And the concept of something going on and on and on without end, do you think that in any way relates to the landscape of North Dakota?
You could look at it that way, I guess.
No, I'm just teasing. I'm not too far away from that myself. That's very interesting. Eternity is, whereas other people are scared by a finite life, that's the other way of looking at it, is the, what if it really is eternal and there's no turning it off?
Yeah, or what if it's like third period math class when you were a kid? It is eternal. Like, maybe that's the fear, is that it's something that will be boring forever. But in fact, you know, maybe he'll have adventures. You know, maybe what the listener isn't aware of is that, you know, after this life, if there, whatever afterlife we go into or whatever that means, reincarnation or any number of things, it becomes a whole new set of adventures that you say, oh, I do want this to keep going. I wouldn't want this to stop. So, you know, maybe it's like that, but I could see that fear, because the fear is of the endless space ahead.
Oh, yeah. It'd be like Fred Flintstone's house, where someone's at the door, and he's walking to the door, and he goes past the same couch, the same window, the same couch, the same window.
Exactly.
And there's a sun, and he's...
You know, my mother had a theory of eternity. I can't believe it. I feel like a mama's boy bringing all this stuff up. But my mother had this theory of eternity, which really freaked me out, which was that towards the end of her life, she said, you know, I think we live our life over and over again, but as different people in it. And I was like, oh, I hope you're not me next time. I hope you're like John, my brother. You know, I hope I hope you go through that. Don't go through what I go through. Go through that.
But Donna.
I'm sorry.
Donna is in Arizona. Demons is what she fears. Why, Donna?
Why? Well, actually, I was listening to one of your nightly shows, and the guest was talking about how demons could, little demons, not Satan, not the big ones, can, little demons can attach themselves to you and just bring your whole life down. For many years, no matter where I lived, there's always been some kind of paranormal activity. I go to a friend's house, they have paranormal activity. I think I got something attached to me.
Don't go see the movie Paranormal Activity.
Saw it last night.
Oh, did you?
I saw it last night, and it was the worst movie I've ever... Oh, never mind.
I'm not a critic. I know, but that's such an interesting reflection on that. Donna, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm going to try to get in a few more people before the top of the hour. Tom is also in Arizona. Tom, your greatest fear, what scares you the most?
Getting hit by a big rig again.
Oh, again?
Again. I was on my Harley. I've been riding since 1979. No problems. And then back in 06... I was on my way home from work on the Harley and got hit by a big rig.
And you survived it, obviously, but much damage done to you?
Just a crushed leg, ended up having it amputated.
Ugh, I can understand. And so you really do, you're always fearing, like, at any second, another big rig's going to come out of nowhere?
Yeah, but I'm not going to let it run my life and make me stop riding a motorcycle.
Well, I hope not for that. Very interesting. Let me run the table here, Doug, and then we'll get a couple of, and then we'll get a comment in at the end. Let me just try to get everybody on who's been hanging on the longest. Hey, Ernest in Texas, what scares you the most, Ernest?
Nuclear war missiles
coming at us.
More or less, back in the 50s, I grew up and, was right. Supposed to get under the table and, wait right. For the fallout and all that mess.
Still stays with you.
And it stays with me. And then I see this movie, The War Games, and
right.
In North Korea, and you got Iran over there playing with missiles.
You're right, and you're right back to where you were. I appreciate that. Thank you for letting me get in a couple more here. Hey, Sasan in California, what scares you the most?
What scares me the most, man, I'm telling you, I cry about it sometimes. I like think looking up at the stars that I'm going to do cryonics. I really am. I'm just so much, just hopefully I'm 25 years old. The future will allow immortality somehow. So death definitely has the biggest fear.
It's just death, just that. Interesting. Lee is in Georgia. Lee, what do you fear the most?
I'm actually a retired firefighter. I am scared to death of ladders. I can get probably 7 or 8 rungs up sometimes, and my legs will just stop moving. I'll tell them, okay, go up, and then I'm just frozen.
Wow. Boy, that's so interesting, isn't it, Doug?
Yeah.
Retired firefighter, scared of ladders.
On the other hand, I'm scared of all these things people are saying now that they're talking about them.
Well, let's throw one more in if we can. Doug is in Texas for Doug Clegg. Go ahead, Doug.
Hey, Armageddon, not so much Armageddon, but the idea that, I'm not really religious, but that the idea that Armageddon has already started coming and no one noticed. I started writing a book, and that's what really did it, is I started writing a book about what if the whole idea behind the Holocaust was to hide 144,000 people being raptured. You put 1 million people in a cage, burn them all, and you wouldn't notice 144,000 missing.
Well, that's an interesting idea that the Holocaust was a cover story to keep us calm because Armageddon had already started to happen. Wow, that is interesting. Let's not forget the real tragedy of all the Jews that were killed, but that's pretty amazing stuff out there. Doug, as a horror fiction writer, there's some new ideas that people should be writing about.
Yeah, exactly. All these people could also take these fears and start writing them. I think I really started writing from both fear and hope. And so if they have these, I think it's not a bad idea to write them out.
Take their fears and turn them into hopes.
Yeah, but certainly, I think if Armageddon comes, we're unfortunate. None of us are going to be here for it. We're going to miss it. We're going to miss the apocalypse. We're going to be like, oh, we missed it.
And so thank you so much. Enjoy this conversation quite a bit. And again, take a look at what Doug's already written, and we'll be following you in the future. Look forward to having you back. Have a great Halloween season. Deus te amat, and I do too.